What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Accounting Flow podcast, brought to you by Financial Sense. This podcast is dedicated to taking a deep dive into accounting firm workflow and processes. Each episode, we will spend 20 minutes interviewing actual accounting firm owners just like you, uncovering specific processes that firm owners and operators encounter on a daily basis, and discuss ways to improve them. Let's go. Welcome to another episode of Accounting Flow. I'm your host, Roman Villar, and today we've got the wonderful, the amazing, and wearer of many hats, Mrs. Kelly Parks. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? And I just learned something new about you, Roman.
What's that?
And this is so I should know, because Canadians understand French. It is not Villar. It's Villar.
C'est Villar en français.
Right. And so that's the French part of it. And I've been like, Roman Villard. I've been doing the, you know, US version of it.
But I get it. Every which way. Every which way. But yes, you're correct. And I'm so glad to have you on today. And today we're going to talk about how to utilize workflows and checklists to enable scalability within your firm. To give the audience a bit of an overview of why you have domain authority on this expertise, can you tell us a bit about who you are and what you're involved in?
Sure. So I am a certified professional bookkeeper. That is a thing in Canada. We have a very strong certifying body in Canada, and we have to hold insurance, and we have to take exams, and we have to have our CPEs. It is not the Wild West of bookkeepers. Of course, there's some that are part of it. But it is not the Wild West of bookkeeping up in Canada. It is a very, very strong organization. And so I've been a part of that organization for, I think, 2014 is when I joined there. I was on the board of directors there for a while, and I am still on their conference committee. It is just a great, great organization. This is not a plug for CPB Canada, but it just turned into one. And so certified professional bookkeeper, and but I come from kind of a technology background. So this is where my bookkeeping meets my technology meets my workflow. And that is, I came from the marketing and branding industry. And now, going on 30 years ago, we experienced a technology upheaval, right? And this seems like nothing probably to even you. But Adobe PDF changed our world because we went from running proofs around on giant pieces of paper to getting our files approved by sending them by email. And that was a game changer. But lots of failures, like a ton of failures in the beginning, right? And then me, and some of my clients who were more forward thinking, we moved to FTP sites to transfer data. Whereas I did insurance and bank work. So it was all in the downtown core of Toronto. Before that, we were using bicycle couriers, literally, to send everything around. So I know this is going to sound ancient to you, but it was a very big deal to go to FTP sites, which then would fail at the worst moment. Mm-hmm. Which I actually had big technology fails last week while I was away, and I just want to cut my hand out. Yeah, so my favorite app, Typeform, stopped sending responses to me. Two Zaps broke that were part of my new process. Yeah, and there was something else that happened. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. But anyways, we had the worst technology failures in the moments that we needed the most. Yeah. And but at any rate, that I think. The technology piece where you're getting to is, why do I think I can talk about this? Is because I have been using cloud technology since forever, when it was a disruptor in another industry. So when I moved into the bookkeeping industry, right away, I started using FreshBooks in 2009 rather than Word documents to invoice my clients, because I was on Mac. So the compelling reason was I was on Mac. And I was trying to run parallels, and it was like, it's a space hog, right? It just killed your system. And so there wasn't a Canadian program other than FreshBooks. And it was like, wow, this is fantastic. So I brought all of those worlds together. And I think I already told you, I've been working remote since 2009, by adopting all of these technology pieces.
Yeah, and there is big debate between Apple, Mac, and PC users amongst us accountants. We won't get into that right now, but I'm also a Mac user, so I'm with you.
Basically, that was one of the compelling reasons, I use the word compelling again, to go to an online program. QuickBooks Desktop, I was hosting it for a while on Dropbox. That's mm-hmm. really before QBox became a stable product. But when Xero and QuickBooks came around in 2012, I believe it was, it was ugly, but, yeah.
And so since then, you've been building various iterations of workflows and checklists to bolt on to these online cloud-based tools that has now evolved into a full business for you of selling these templates and workflows and checklists that bolt onto various tools. And that's a big part of your current business, correct?
It is. Yep. So I create and sell templates. Some of them are just in, and I say just in spreadsheets. I don't take that lightly. Spreadsheets have a lot of power for building stuff, and they can be imported, but I build them proprietary in some of the apps like Financial Sense, for example. I have templates that you just open them up in Financial Sense and you're ready to go.
That's good. And so we've got a lot of experience as it relates to cloud tools, building checklists, ensuring that they work together amongst the tools you may or may not have integrated. I want to lead with, why is it important to establish a foundation of process? But before I jump into that, I want to understand, what's the difference between a checklist and a workflow? Because I think of those very differently, and I want to hear your take on that.
No, I want to hear yours first.
For me, checklists are kind of stressful. It's like a to-do list. It's like just check it off and then it's done. It disappears. It goes away. A workflow is something that is constant. It is moving. It is interconnected. And it will be updated based on other things that are happening within an organization. So it's, it's part of a checklist, but also it's always connected to something else that's happening. Matthew made it a good job of kind of characterizing his thoughts on this too in his episode. But I feel like checklists are stressful. Workflows are exciting.
Workflows are exciting. Oh, and of course, Matthew May said something great. Should I listen to that first and then try to outdo him? Not that I'm competitive, especially with Matthew. With Kenji?
I don't know. Probably visionaries.
Yeah. So interesting you should say that, because sometimes when I am working with people or doing presentations, I try to get people to stop thinking of things that they need to get done as workflows, because some people are overwhelmed by the concept of a workflow. So very often I'll bring them back and say, stop being stressed about it being a workflow. It is a checklist with extra elements. So everybody comes at it from a different place, right?
Okay. The checklist is alive.
Yes. And so a lot of people struggle more with, I have to have a workflow because then it has to be perfect. Whereas if you think of it as just starting with a checklist, which is the basis of all workflow.
Sure. Okay. So it's a little bit easier to think about the checklist side of things because we're all familiar with that. And as Matthew characterized it in his episode, he always wants a checklist item to be kicking off something else that's happening next.
Yes.
That would be more indicative of what we would probably typify as a workflow.
Okay, so I actually stress a couple of things often. Stop overthinking them, and you and I agree on that. We're crying out loud, just get on with something, right? Or buy my templates. Getting started is worse than being perfect, right?
Yeah.
Or better than, you know what I mean. Now I can't remember where we were at. Matthew said.
A checklist item should always be kicking off something else. That is a workflow.
So the one thing that I really like to start people with is think in terms of it as milestones. Mm-hmm. And then your checklist is really the milestones of things that need to get done. Meaning you do this and then the next thing falls in line. Just like Matthew said, right? So you start with one thing and then it's going to kick off another thing. I try to convince people to build their workflows in checklists that are milestones. And then the other thing that I really try to get them to think about, even though I don't want them to overthink about them, I want them to think about what is the outcome they're looking for. What is the reason that they need this checklist? What's it going to solve? What's your outcome going to be? And that comes from the marketing background. Because in the marketing background, we didn't call them workflows. We called them workbacks. And so I use the word term workback quite a bit. You actually start at the end. So if you're really stuck on your checklist, so an onboarding outcome would be that I want to bring a client in from prospect to working directly in their file with as few communications and little lift on their part, making the client experience seamless. But the day I start working in their file is the day that I want to keep working in their file. I don't want to go back for things. I don't want to find out I'm missing things. I don't want that not to just get working. So back to the marketing thing. We always started with the end run. And for me, I did corporate work. As I was saying, it was banks, insurance companies. And so it was all compliance driven by the Securities Commission. Everything relied on the Securities Commission deadline date. And that was in the days where annual reports or IPOs were literally paper that had to be in the hands of a shareholder by mail, right? Yeah. By a certain date. And so that was the ultimate outcome, that the information contained was compliant. Generally, we wanted them to look nice. We wanted them to be there on the correct date. So what were the farthest flung in Canada? It would have been Vancouver. I live in the center of the universe, Toronto. So it would have been Vancouver and then St. John's, New Brunswick, or St. John, Newfoundland, whatever one you want to pick. What was going to be the hardest thing to get those out to there? So that was, what's the Canada Post delivery deadline there? Hmm. And then we started working backwards. And then that work back would then say, okay, when does it have to be at the fulfillment house? When does it have to be at the bindery? When does it have to be at the printer? When does the paper need to be ordered? Then it became not just a checklist of the things that had to be done, starting at the bottom. It also became a workflow or a work back now, because it would say, who's the stakeholder here? Yep. Who are we ordering the paper from? Who approves the budget on the paper? How far ahead? What is the deadline? Because the paper was probably coming from China because of the size of the orders we were at. Mm-hmm. Is that on the floor at the paper mill? Because the paper mill is even imported, right? Yeah, they're a mill, sure. They're importing. Right up to the top of when do we get approval on the budget and then start the design process. And then we would label who's in the design process. We've got a designer, obviously, we've got me in the middle, and we've got the client on approvals.
So taking that philosophy of work back and saying, hey, we know that there are multiple checkpoints, multiple milestones that occur in any accounting firm's workflow or process or checklist. Yeah. There are multiple individuals that contribute. There are multiple dependencies that are required to be also checked as you walk through this process. Why is it so important as somebody who's setting up their initial infrastructure to think about this relative to wanting to scale, wanting to grow? Because I think a lot of us look at it and say, okay, I'm going to take a new client. I have got recurring accounting work I need to get done. So I need to reconcile the bank accounts, the credit cards, the balance sheet, and then deliver financials. Check, 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 check. Delivered, done. But if you really want to scale, why is it so important to make sure that that is in order at the beginning?
Yeah. So, Kelly. So, the day I decided to hire Marissa to do the day-to-day bookkeeping for my client work was the day that she could basically start working for me. And that is only because I had those checklists. It was only me for a long time. I had those checklists built out partly because that's my nature. The minute I'm going to do something twice, I'm going to make a how-to. So you can also think of these checklists as how-to, because even I would forget, like I'm the greatest thing ever. I didn't do it that way. A milestone for me, as ridiculous as it sounds, the end thing is closing the books with a password. So if I didn't have a checklist that said close the books with a password because I forgot, and that's a big deal, right? Because clients are in the books. This is a pretty collaborative world. Or an account. I don't do taxes, so an accountant could be in there. Now, Marissa, somebody can undo your work. It's right there on the list. That allows you to scale because you're not pissing off clients by having stuff undone in the books. You can't scale if you're not, well, I know some firms can. You can't scale if you're not doing good work. You can't do good work if you don't make your way through the process. And you can't do it efficiently if you're going to do it out of order.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example. In the onboarding process for me, which is the one that fell apart 2 weeks ago for me when I have a new niche and it's doing accounting firms book. And I talk about onboarding, and then honestly, my type form fell apart, and then a zap fell apart that didn't move something. Like it couldn't have been more, but that's life, right? My world didn't end. So anyways, it's actually seven milestones. And within those milestones are all of the things that need to happen. So the checklist is discovery, we do these things, right? Then it is file review. And we do these things. And then it is quote, and it is information gather. Engagement doesn't come until after I've gathered all of the information. Because if a client doesn't get me stuff at that stage, they're never going to get it to me when we're married. I'm going to be fighting with them every single month. So I don't get engaged on anybody who can't follow my process from the beginning.
Yeah.
I also don't quote any books until I've seen the books, even for accounting firms.
Sure.
Right? I mean, I've looked at books where there's all kinds of stuff that just hasn't been reconciled. That's a big lift to reconcile all of these old accounts. So the dependencies are really important, but the milestones, but then let's take the discovery phase. The discovery phase has, you know, send type form. That's somewhat automated because it's on my website. Of course, that fell apart, but it's on my website. So you go to my website and you fill out the discovery form that has all of the dependencies. Do you use QuickBooks Online? No. Well, then it goes straight to the end, right? And then who is the file review going to go off to? So now you've got what the tasks are. You've got what the technology is, right? So there's the tasks. There's the technology piece. There's what's automated. And then there's who's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it from a checklist to a workflow.
So one thing that you alluded to in regards to scalability was that you are not capable, you're not able to hire somebody to take over that work, that monthly bookkeeping work, without having the documentation, without having the things that you are doing twice really well instructed in the form of a checklist and then ultimately a workflow. And so when you brought on an accountant, how did you think through, I need to have this before hiring somebody to get me into a position of doing the things that I want to be doing? And then how does that repeat and continue for those firm owners that want to repeat that 10, 15, 20, 30 times to grow their firm?
Right. So a couple of things there. First, I hired a bookkeeper, not an accountant, just for those people that are in the weeds of that. I don't think you can scale successfully unless you can do good client work.
Right.
So start with that, even if you are one or two people in your firm right now. And good work means like good policy. So in part of the workflow, it is we're clearing the bank fee. How do you clear the bank fee? Don't just say clear the bank fee. That's a milestone. But then it would be have all banks open in one, you know, one window, all tabs open with all of the bank feeds to make sure that and accounts payable and accounts receivable and undeposited funds. So you open all of those up so that you can see everything. It's efficient because you can't scale if you're not efficient. And it's good client work because AR and AP and undeposited funds aren't an afterthought. Inter-account transfers are not an afterthought. Are they lining up or are they not lining up? You can see right in the moment because you've got them all open.
Yep.
That's how you can do good client work. And that's how you can scale because it's super efficient. And then you take it next level and you build a way for your team to do it well. So it will say, actually, in the bank feeds, it will say what bank feeds you should be opening and open accounts payable and accounts receivable and deposit funds. Then I made it easy to do because I created bookmarks of all of that, the reports, the bank feeds, put them in a folder so that you right click it and you open them all at once. You can't help but open them. The same policy with the reconciliations. There's a dependency that you have to have cleared the bank feeds, but then at the same time, there is now, and you can actually do this at a client level where there's an ID number in the QuickBooks file for reconciliations. You can bookmark each bank account reconciliation screen, put them in a folder for that client, put in the accounts payable, accounts receivable, undeposited funds, right-click it and open up all of their reconciliations at once.
Ooh, that's a hot tip. I did not know that.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And somebody said to me, well, you can't scale that. You can't like possibly save all of those bookmarks for each client. Yes, you can. You got to do them once. The very first time you do it, make it the policy that you bookmark them, put them in a folder with the client name on it, right-click them and open them. And put that policy in your workflow. So, but also in the workflow, because you want it to be bulletproof, in the workflow, you still name the things you need to open. Open the checking, open the savings, open the emergency loan account, open the Visa, like how many Visas are there? Is there clearing accounts? You still have to list them, right? Open accounts payable, accounts receivable. You still list them, but then have a way of making it super efficient.
I think it's interesting because to your point, those types of discoveries can easily be baked into a new process or updated. And so you say, hey, this has created a lot of efficiency in our team. Let's do this for every new client we onboard. Yeah. Bang, you put it in your onboarding policy. Yeah. Now, you made the statement of you want your workflows, you want your policies to be bulletproof. And I like that a lot, but I'm going to challenge a little bit because I want ironclad process to the extent that I can still modify and change and ebb and flow them as I scale and grow, because ultimately there will be clients that have nuances that fall outside of the scope. There will be team members that come on board that say, hey, have you thought about doing it this way? And so while I want it to be ironclad, I want there to be a set of rules that say, here are the items that would cause me to change a process should I need to. So like, what is that internal mental checklist that I need to have, or maybe written checklist to say, if X exists or Y happens, then we need to change this process. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so I might not have explained myself clearly enough. I want them to be rock solid. I want them to be iterating constantly.
Yeah. Yep.
That you need to iterate those. And that is the beauty of cloud technology. We can iterate so easily and share that across our team, right? So anytime I make a change in Financial Sense to like a checklist or a process, it's live. Marissa can see it. Will I add in a video? Probably. We pop videos in the resources in there. She does and I do, right? So will we put in a video as well? Yeah, 100%. And I have, you know, the videos are interesting too, because if you see the way you work, you will catch things differently than just, So I caught myself doing something that was like, why am I doing it that way? But it was working well in my checklist. But when that I saw so it in true. Video, and then Marissa caught something that I was doing, because she can tell me whatever she wants, right? Just let her fly. And she saw something. She says, that's a really dumb way of doing it. Like nicely. I mean, we're nice to each other, but you know, you could see the nuances in the video of the work, right?
Yeah. So I think that's a really good practice to bake into a workflow, is like taking video snapshots of maybe on a quarterly annualized basis, and or like retraining somebody on how to do it. Cause this came up yesterday with me. I was training somebody on a process that I use for a client. And as I was going through the process training him, I was like, why am I doing it this way? I was challenging myself and trying to explain it to him. And I know that he was like, why is he doing it this way? So like those types of internal feedback mechanisms are so important for continually improving workflows.
Yeah. So what we did was when I hired Marissa, I already had the checklists because I am a lunatic for the workflows. I had descriptions for me, and I always plan on somehow, since I missed the mark on my life goal of being a trust fund baby, my next in line, I never try to think of myself as not working because I'm going to get hit by a bus. I think of myself as not working because I'm going to win a lottery so big that I'm going to ghost everybody but my family and friends. So sorry for any of my clients. I love y'all. But I have always, so I was a single parent for a long time, not a long time, seven, 8 years, literally a single parent, no other person. So I have always said to myself, what if something happens to me? Does everybody know, is everything in play that they can just mourn my loss, right? Of course, then I still did stupid things out at Vail. I'm the only parent living rural, right? We lived out in the country on a lake. My kids needed to get everywhere, and I would still jump off the lift at the top of, you know, we call it Roger's run, but Roger's run, which is an insane bump run, right? And not look and just point them south and head down. Or do the backcountry at Blackcomb, right? So there was a compelling need for both my clients and my kids to have somebody be able to take over my stuff. So it's not just about scaling your work. It's the same idea. I always, how am I going to get myself out of my client work gracefully? I do take on project work as well. I need everything to go back to them. So even when it was just, I needed to go back to them. I needed to go back. I had a contingency partner. So I needed to go back to Mike at Upside Accounting. Lots of shouts out to Mike so that he could take over in that moment. He has my one password and all of my processes. We're good to go, right? So if it is scalable enough that you win the lottery and you don't show up tomorrow, it is scalable enough probably for your business, right? It's another way to think of it. But then when Marissa came in, I had the lists. And I had descriptions, I had subtasks, I had links to everything. Like I always had all of that. But then when Marissa came in, the very first time we were working through each client file, I already had the videos of me doing the work. We took a video of her and I together, me handing the work off to her. And that was an interesting tell. So I would say that would be another good thing to do to add into your list. So part of your workflow, you and I just said, is the videos. It doesn't just need to be a video of you doing the work. On that first training sessions, those videos can go in too and maybe replace the old videos.
Sure. And we use Loom internally for recording those videos. Is that what you use as well?
Yeah. And a word on Loom. Couple of words on Loom. I do that with my clients as well. And now some of my clients Loom me back. I mean, it's a game changer, right? You could go back and forth by email 100 times. But at one point, one day, I didn't have my voice and I looked like hell. It was during COVID, so you knew what I had. And I needed to get something out to a client and I did it without video and without sound. I just jumped on, did the video so she could see because it was somewhat urgent that she change up a process she had. So don't overthink those videos, right? But password protect them.
Yes.
So I see lots of people sending the actual video. Please don't do that with client work. And please, you can make it so you share it. You have to have the right email. And then you can password protect. Loom makes it really hard to find password protecting. But if you Google it, so I really want this message to go out. Please password protect those Loom videos of client stuff.
Two thoughts on that. One, yes, absolutely, password protect. That wasn't the first thought. That was a sub-thought. The first one is, if you are in a position where you are off camera, you don't have a voice, whatever it may be, you can utilize tools like 11 Labs to clone your voice. And my ultimate vision is that all these workflows lead to a point where, you know, we can have AI support some degree of analysis based on how we would prompt a tool to analyze financials and the core things that we would deliver as part of a monthly package. It would then come up with a script that would shoot over to 10 or 11 labs that would clone my voice, that would go into a video alongside of the financials, and then bang, the client has it. Now, that that eliminates a lot of the personality, a lot of the personal relationship that's required for a lot of this stuff. But you can utilize something like 11 Labs to clone your voice in exactly how you would say what you would say over the top of a video.
Sure. You could, and you just blew so many people's minds, but you also just had a whole crowd of listeners that went, I can't even make a checklist.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. So the checklist is really what is enabling you to be able to scale into those new areas of automation and AI and things like that, right?
Can we dial your Loom video back a little bit even? Transcripts are easy. Let's just even use the transcripts, because then it's almost like a description that can go, if you ever want it to, it can go right into your workflow. Like, it can be part of your checklist. Let's not scare people with cloning voices and stuff. Like, who do we think we are? Blake and Ryan? Do you know they're right? Ryan? So I should say who it is, right? Ryan Lozanis of Future Firm, I believe, is cloning his voice for his podcast now, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
Yes.
And he said that. And I believe he's also using 11 Labs to do that. One of the things that I think we can take this detour of AI that I brought us on to a very usable place of, most people have heard of ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. Most people have heard of tools that you can utilize to transcript videos, right? So you can record, Google Meet or a Zoom call. They will start to transcribe the meetings. You could use Fathom Note Taker or Supernormal Notes or Fireflies for transcripts.
I believe I've had Supernormal Notes come from you to me.
I believe you have too. And I think I've turned that off for external parties, hopefully at this point. But what you can do in order to get started at the base level of any checklist or process is hop onto a video, have it be recorded for transcript, and then just talk about your process. Just verbalize it externally, and then utilize a tool like ChatGPT to summarize and distill the notes in process form. And you'll be amazed as to what comes out of that. And you can utilize that as a really good base level note or process for a tool like Financial Sense, Asana, Monday, whatever, if you would just want like a really easy way to get started and you don't have $50 to buy Kelly's templates.
Right. My templates are more than $50. Just so know your market.
$200.
I only buy my templates because every nuance is done. Financial Sense, if you don't want to buy the templates, it has AI built in. And I think the best use case scenario is getting unstuck. It's not going to be super robust workflow, but another one of my favorite sayings, the hardest part of going for a run is putting on your shoes. And so getting started is really tough. Just put in there QuickBooks, Dext, Pluto workflow, monthly workflow, and see what comes out of it. I mean, it can't hurt to try.
That's so true. And there are two camps, right? Like, I'm going to be one that I want to tinker with a lot of things. I want to play. I want to mess around with ChatGPT. Not that I have the time to do that. But I just find it to be really fun. But that also leads to a lot of inefficiencies personally for me in developing these checklist workflows and maintaining them. If I was smart, I would probably just spend the $300 on just buying a template, plugging it in, and maybe making small customizations to it, and then be off to the races. There are so many more efficiencies that can be gained by just taking the dollars to save your time to build something that's really efficient for you. That is all predicated upon having time and the dollars, but at the same time, it is so much more efficient to do that.
I wondered if AI was going to be a competitor for me, and I think I need to step up my game on my value statement, but my sales are not slowing down. Back to you tinkering. That is one of the things that you need to, I'm going somewhere with this, you need to consider if you want to scale, is what are the various learning styles that you need to address? If you're going to use those checklists to delegate so that you are out of the work, but that it is still good work being done, because I can't stress that enough. It has to be good work. And it's not, you're not going to have happy clients if you've got loose checklists and workflows.
Right.
You need to address the various learning styles for your team and for your clients. So get out ahead of that. You are, I believe, a kinesthetic learner. Do you know what a kinesthetic learner? I think you probably do. Yeah, you want to tinker, you want to play, you want to, you don't care too much about making some mistakes along the way. Nobody's going to die if you ask ChatGPT the wrong question, right? Yep. There are people that learn visually. There are those they may need like a full checklist with subtasks, with lots of description. And then you're going to have the ones that want to read and write. And then this is also where the videos come in. So a good checklist includes the videos that that people can see and hear as well. So you need to address all those learning styles.
That is such a great just conclusion to this conversation around process and workflow, because not everybody thinks about it the same way. Mm-hmm. And the way that I think about it very tactically, very experimentally drives people on my team absolutely bonkers, but that's how I get to a conclusion of, you know, process and checklist and figuring out things on my own. But ensuring that you have a variety of means of understanding and learning and transition and, handing that off to the next person who should be owning that work is instrumental to ensuring that you have scalability in your firm. I think that was a phenomenal point, Kelly. Thank you for that.
That also comes back to super quickly when you are deciding on a workflow app. What's the flexibility? Do they have a board view, a list view, a calendar view? Because I personally like a list view. Mm-hmm. Lots of people like to see things in a different way. It kind of comes back to the addressing some of those learning styles. So.
Boy, and we could do an entire episode on how to evaluate workflow management tools and things like that. Kelly, you are a great resource to approach about things like that. If people do want to find you, A, do you want them to, and B, where would they find you?
So yes, I would like them to find me. The easiest starting point is I have a landing page that basically has big fat buttons that take you to where you want to go. And that website is simple. It is calmwaters.ca. So it's calmwaters.ca. And not to sound full of myself, but I think if you went Kelly Parks with an IE and either accounting or Intuit or Financial Sense, I think I'd pop up. Did that sound too full of myself that I'm searchable?
You know, I'm not sure. We'll let the audience give you feedback on that. And if your SEO is what you think it is, but I think you're right. I believe that will take people to the right channels, whether it's LinkedIn or your website. So either way, people will be able to find you. They can also find me and I can get them to you in one way, shape or form. But I'm so glad that we had a chance to chat today. Thank you for coming on, and more to come, I'm sure. More to come.
Well, thank you for having me on. And so because I'm a brat, I'm going to end it at, we still should have recorded the part about should accounting firms consider cost of services sold in their chart of accounts? Both of us said yes.
I believe firms should have cost of sales, cost of goods sold in their accounts. And that is another discussion for another time, but right. That might stir up some dialogue here on the backside. All right, Kelly, have a good one. Thank you for coming on.
Okay. Thank you, Roman.
For listening in today, if you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to share and write a review. This is going to help other firm owners just like you find our podcast and get insights into how to grow their firm. Stay tuned.